had a very interesting conversation with someone earlier who was interested in coming along to the centre. And it wasn't very long into the conversation that I realised that he already had spiritual practices and was attending a place somewhere else doing something else. And so I let him talk about it, and he eulogised about what he was doing, and it all sounded very interesting, and there was a lot of crossover with what we do here, but there are also differences. So I just reached a point where I just said, well, why are you here? What possible reason could you have for us? But he was curious about what we did, so then I explained about what we did and so forth. But during the conversation, I just pointed out that his situation was fine. He didn't need to come along here. We had a very pleasant discussion, and he went on his way. If only all of life could be as cordial. If only people could have differences of approach, different systems, different narratives, different ways of being, of living, and be all right with other people having their way of doing things and their way of being things, and being able to discuss, compare and contrast, see the differences, see the similarities. They, all right, cheerio, and off you go. And what a polite world, lovely world it would be. It would be a world full of love, wouldn't it? And everyone would just love one another, and it would be this. Which is his, one of the things that got me thinking about this was this is his conclusion, that you know, we're here to realise that we're beings of love, and we're here to love one another, and yeah, it's like that. Maybe it's something to do with my upbringing. Actually, it's not about me, but something in my upbringing makes me go, when I hear of such things, and which is ironic given that actually the realisation of enlightenment is the realisation of love. But I think that it can become something of a, dare I say it, a cliche for spiritual people who are intent on spiritual knowledge and spiritual understanding. It can come across as a little bit trite, maybe, at times. Maybe a little bit of a truism. This whole thing about we're here to love one another. Do you always love the people around you? Come on, this is the human realm. And it's a lovely aspiration. And it is undoubtedly the case that the realization of non-duality, non-separation, is the realization of love. But it's so much more subtle than I think people realize. And the way I like to put it is that love is the absence of division. So the spiritual path could be said to be a path of dissolving the barriers and divisions between things, and the transcendence of the division between things and beings. And I think that as you walk the path and you engage in the various spiritual practices, that is something that begins to become very obvious. And so, for instance, like the practice of compassion. You can do a formal meditation with the practice of compassion. But what, at heart, is it about? It's about seeing what unites us rather than what divides us. It's about seeing what we have in common rather than looking at the differences. And what is it honing in on? What is it that is actually common to everyone? And I think if you look at the first noble truth, you find your answer. The first noble truth states there is suffering. Birth is suffering. And having been born in the first place, it is inevitable that there will be old age, decay, and death. Now, is it true that having been born, there is old age, decay, and death only for people who voted for Brexit? It might come sooner for them, generally speaking, but not necessarily. And there you go. You know. But it is absolutely common to all of us, isn't it? Irrespective of our ethnic origins, our race, our creed, our sexuality. There are so many divisions in the world at the moment, aren't there? Everyone is dividing, 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 dividing. I heard recently that, and I've got no dog in this fight at all. I just want everyone to be happy and at peace and free from suffering. Okay, so, but there is now a few problems with identity politics, because it's all about it's about inclusion, but it's also about establishing identity as separate from other identities. And one of the problems they've discovered is that there are people of colour, but now they've discovered that there are people of colour who are more oppressed than other people of colour. So now you have a division between, there are black indigenous people of colour, and then there are people of colour. So you've got a division now. Within a identity group, there's now a subdivision. There's also another problem that they found now with transgender issues, that people who are identifying legally as women of female gender but have masculine biology are now allowed to enter into women's athletic events, which of course they're winning hands down by miles and miles and miles. And that's now creating a new problem. It's creating a new division. It's creating a new form of oppression and bias and all of this. And so it's fractious. It's so divided. And so underlying it, I understand that the reasons are compassionate. Another problem with this kind of thing is that if you are staunchly and compassionately on the side of the underdog, and you wish to raise them up and give them the opportunities that everyone else is receiving, then there's no reason why they shouldn't. But, I mean, that's completely understandable and compassionate. You want the inclusion, and that's completely understandable and good. But what happens is, when somebody disagrees with you or disagrees with your methods, that they are then seen as being in opposition and are therefore excluded. So you have things like people at university being stopped from speaking. There's big issues around going and what they call deplatforming people. And the more strongly you hold to your values, the more it appears as though the person who is apparently in opposition to you is at the other extreme. And so everything becomes ever more polarized and becomes more fractious and divided. But it's underscored by a desire for equality, fairness, justice. So it's coming out of a compassionate root, but then is somehow being warped in the process. So when we practice compassion, we're looking at what it is that we have in common rather than what it is that is different between us. So, you know, it's like, I've talked about this before, but is there a special kind of Buddhist happiness which non-Buddhists can't possibly experience? Is there a kind of frustration which is only experienced by, I don't know, French people, off the top of my head? Or is, when we say the word happiness, we all know what we mean by that. When we say frustration, we all know what we mean by that, because it's a common human quality. And it's the same with the rest of the first noble truth. Okay, the fact that there's birth, there is old age, decay and death. There is grief, sorrow, lamentation, pain, and despair. There is the separation from the loved. There is union with the unloved. There is the inability to get what one wants. So that's true, that is baseline human experience. That is true for everyone here. I mean, if that was not true for you, then you fall into the category of saint, which, as you know, last week I said it was saints that weren't really allowed to come along, because there wasn't any reason for saints to come along, because they're saints. But for the rest of us, it's like, we all experience those things, and you experience those things whether you're black, white, gay, straight, Remain, Brexit, Trump supporter, or whatever. You know, the list goes on and on and on and on. It's true for everyone. Okay, so what does the practice of compassion do? It starts to dissolve those boundaries, dissolve those divisions, because you see underneath what divides you and connect with what actually you have in common humanity. So you just want to avoid falling into self-pity when you're practicing compassion. You know, retain a degree of equanimity, realizing that this is our commonality, and in all their different ways, people are trying to find that peace and happiness and undivided love that we're all seeking. It's the same, they're just, people are just going about it in what they consider at this time to be the best way. And they're always allowed to change their mind, and so we're allowed to experiment and work something out and find out whether it works or what doesn't work, and then move on to something else. So, and that's another aspect of what you get with compassion, is a softening of the heart. You start to dissolve those fixed conceptual boundaries between people by recognizing what unites us. So in that way, barriers are dissolved, and then there is an openness, and then your actions are based in compassion. And whether you choose to act or you choose not to act is entirely a personal decision, on a case-by-case basis, but mind imbued with compassion is coming from the right place. So another way we dissolve barriers is when we concentrate. We sit down to meditate and we decide to focus exclusively on the sign of the breath, the movements of the abdomen, to the exclusion of everything else. Although, as you know, I talk very much about having to firstly include what else goes on, to take full account of what else goes on, and then keep bringing your mind back to watching the breathing process. And you watch the in-breath, you watch the out-breath. And what are we doing when we do that? We're focusing our attention exclusively on one object. The mind begins to lose interest in other things. And while I think about it, one of the main things that it loses interest is in obsessive, neurotic thoughts about oneself, the hindrances. So as one concentrates, one finds that actually concentrating on the breathing process is a lot more interesting than the trivial things of the self. And so what you find is, as you start to concentrate and you absorb your mind on the object to the exclusion of everything else, there's this repetition condition that kicks in, and you find that the mind really glums in on what you're looking at to the absolute exclusion of everything else. Now, in some way, we all experience this dozens of times during the day. You're fixed on one thing, and you let go of everything else. But in meditation, we're specifically developing that to a very high degree. Now, as a consequence of that, there is this state of undivided attention that develops. It's a state of absorption. And in that state, there is only the object and the conscious knowing of the object. And there is nothing else at all. There is no reference to that. There is no sense of myself in relationship to that. There is just that. So it is a temporary state of absorption, which is extraordinarily rapturous, blissful, It's everything you ever wanted life to be. It's just absolutely gorgeous, and you're in that state. There's absolutely no self-referencing, because there's no self-references. No self-referencing. There's no awareness of any kind of duality. So temporarily, you have dissolved that sense of myself in relation to the rest of existence. And that mimics enlightenment. It's extraordinarily blissful. Once there is just the acknowledgement of oneself in relation to what's going on, then immediately you have the duality and you have the re-establishing of the perception of time and space and myself as separate from the rest of the world, which is dukkha, which is suffering, which is, by comparison, is terrible. It's like you've been thrown out of heaven. It's awful. Oh, let me get back in. However, that's what you get with absorption, concentration. You get a temporary reprieve from suffering. How? Through the elimination of division. In that moment, there's just absorption in the object. So that's another way that you can experience, and that is love. I mean, you come out of that feeling well loved up. It takes you back to the 90s. It really does. Anyway, we'll go into that. But it is temporary. So you're still kicked out of heaven, you still come back to earth, and you still have to deal with worldly existence. There is a way of completely dissolving all division which is not reliant on getting into that kind of fixed state. So literally, you can just be going about your everyday business and you can experience that unconditional love, which is enlightenment. And the way we do that is through practicing insight meditation. So this is another way that you dissolve boundaries. And so with insight meditation, you're dissolving boundaries of the conceptual universe. You're seeing through the appearance of separation. You're dissolving the apparent objectivity, the apparent objective universe, the universe of separate objects, by, as it were, lifting the lid of existence and looking under and seeing how everything actually works. So you sit down to meditate. Instead of going for more and more and more and more concentration, we reach a point where we're free of hindrances for the time being. It's a nice mental space to be in. But instead of getting concentrated, we turn our attention to noting and observing everything in our experience arising and passing away. So it might be, it's just our ordinary state of mind, it's nothing special, it's just the ordinary components of our ordinary experience. But we're looking at a sound, or a thought, or a feeling, movement of the breath, pressure, temperature. We're just noting what's taking place in our experience, and we're observing their behavior. The sounds last, the thoughts last, the feelings last, the perceptions last. And what we're actually looking at here are the building blocks of experience. We're looking at the basic fundamental components that go to make up any conscious experience whatsoever. And you start to, as you're examining, you start to recognize certain characteristics in all these building blocks that hitherto you had never noticed. It's not that they weren't there, it's always been there, it's just we hadn't stopped to actually look. And you start to recognize two significant things. I can't talk about everything, unfortunately. I'd love to keep you here for hours and hours talking about it all, but can't. So let's just focus on transience and conditionality. You see the characteristic that nothing that arises in your experience has the nature to persist through time. It all arises and passes away. A thought arises and passes away. Shape and colour arises and passes away. A sound arises and passes away. If you think about, literally, I've talked about this in a talk, but it's permissible, isn't it, to mention things more than once. You walked up here or to the centre this evening, or you walked down the hill, or if you're on a retreat, you walked down the corridor to get here. However you came, whichever method you came, what now persists of those experiences? Those experiences, the experience of walking up the hill, the sounds of the traffic, there was the shape and colour of the road and the buildings, there were the thoughts that are arising, there was the seeing, the hearing, the tasting. Tasting? I had a sweet in my mouth. But whatever, what now persists in that experience? Does anything, has anything passed through from that past experience to this experience? Is it possible for such a thing to happen? So one of the things that you discover through practicing insight meditation is that objects, ultimate objects, thoughts, feelings, sounds, tastes, touches, do not move. They simply arise where they are and then cease. And the other thing is the recognition of conditionality. And conditionality is saying that nothing is self-originated, nothing is self-existing. That everything that exists, even for just a nanosecond, has a whole host of conditions attached to it. And without those conditions, that thing would not occur. So it is dependently originated. It's not a thing in and of itself. And the perfect illustration of that is a rainbow. We know that a rainbow is not a thing in and of itself. It depends on the conditions of light and rain in order for that particular effect to occur. And if you take one of those conditions away, the effect immediately disappears. Now, the thing is, when we're looking at ultimates, we're seeing that this is true also of the ultimates of existence, of these basic building blocks of existence. So, there's a sound, there's the knowing of the sound. Those two things arise together and cease together. That's one of the insights that you come to see. That you cannot actually separate out the arising of the object and the knowing of the object. So if it's a sound, then the knowing of the object is hearing. So there's a sound and there's hearing. If there's no hearing, there's no sound. If there's no sound, there's no hearing. The two depend on one another for their existence in that moment, in ultimate terms. And what you find from repeating observation of this, and this is true for all the senses, is that there is always a whole set of conditions for the arising of any one object, and that object then becomes one of the conditions for the arising of another object, and then that object becomes one of the conditions for the arising of another object, and you find that you have this net of conditionality. And the whole of existence is this net of conditionality. But there's no self in any of it. So we assume that it is I who thinks, it is I who feels, it is I that perceives, it is my body, it's my feelings, it's my sensations. There is part of the ignorant mind that takes ownership of experience, and that creates this division, this perceptual division, this conceptual division, the belief that I am separate from the rest of the world, and that is the origin of all suffering. And what you find is that through practicing insight meditation is that these processes, conditioned and conditioning processes, are happening all by themselves. There's no one there doing it. There is no one there who is required to be there for conscious experience to unfold. Conscious experience simply unfolds without the need for any separate self. So what you find is that you start to recognize what the Buddha means when he says that all these processes are impersonal. There is fear, worry, anxiety, stress. There is love, compassion, tranquility, interest, investigation. Every component part of experience, that you know exists does indeed exist. What doesn't exist is that separate person, that separate seer, who knows these things, who is the experiencer of these things. So what you discover is that it is a conceit to believe that there is... the conceit is that I am body. Or the conceit is that body is contained within me. Or the conceit is I am contained within the body. Or the conceit is I am the owner of the body. The conceit is I am feeling. The conceit is feeling is contained within me. The conceit is I am contained within feeling. The conceit is I am the owner of feeling. And now you can go and do that with every component part of experience, and you will see that actually there is no requirement for there to be a self for feeling to be. There is no requirement for a self for perception to be. There is no requirement for a self for consciousness to be. There is no requirement for a self for mental formations to be. There is no requirement for a self for materiality to be. And so you discover through this process of investigation that the whole of conscious experience is happening, unfolding right now, without there being any self, any being behind it all. And that is utterly liberating, because that dissolves the conceptual barrier that makes you feel excluded from the rest of the world, that makes you feel separate. And what you discover is there is just simply this field of conditioned and conditioning phenomena, which has been completely understood, and out of that field of conditioned and conditioning phenomena, the apparent separate universe is created, is constructed. And so with the dissolution, with all of that, all the barriers and divisions that appeared to be there are just dissolved. And what's left is just limitless. This. Now, if you want to call that unconditional pure love, you're very, very welcome to. You can call it what you like. The Buddha called it Nibbana. And he didn't go on and on about it, though. I mean, you look in the Pali Canon, his emphasis was on helping people realize this for themselves. So is that the end of the story? No, not quite. And this is the thing that a lot of people have difficulty with when it comes to the realization of perfection. So you've realized that actually there is no division between anything, anywhere. That the universe of separate things is only apparent, it's not fundamentally real. But you've inadvertently created a new exclusion. A new division, because you said, well, the universe that I thought was there turns out only to be conceptual, therefore it's not real. So you've excluded it. So enlightenment is only true enlightenment when you realize that you still got that division. And you dissolve that division by bringing that conceptual universe back. So you've still got the conceptual universe. You've got the ultimate building blocks that give rise to the conceptual universe. And then finally, you've got the whole picture. And because you're not excluding that conventional conceptual universe. But what does that conceptual universe contain? Injustice? Unfairness? Pain? Grief? Sorrow, despair. So you have to include those things as part of the great perfection. Because otherwise, if you exclude it, you've got a new division. And what you realize is that it is absolutely necessary to have the suffering, to cause someone to reflect, to enter into a spiritual training in order to realize the perfection themselves. And then, with the breakup of this body, you don't have to come back. You don't have to go through all this again. Okay? So, that is the process of the training. It is a process of dissolving barriers, divisions. But then, in the last analysis, you bring all of that back. Because without it, you haven't got the complete picture. And once you've got the complete picture, everything is understood. Truly understood for what it is. And yes, there is even love for the fearful, the anxiety, all the things that you think should not be contained within perfection are contained within it. And there is a love for that too, because there is an understanding of why that's there.